Welcome to Control the Flame, the podcast that helps you tame your temper and manage your anger. I'm your host, Claire Bradley, the Anger Management Coach. In this podcast, I'll share with you tips, techniques, and strategies to cope with anger in a healthy and constructive way. Whether you struggle with anger yourself, or you have to deal with someone who does, this podcast is for you. Each week, I'll bring you expert interviews, inspiring stories, and practical advice on how to control the flame and live a more peaceful and fulfilling life. So sit back, relax, and get ready to learn how to master your emotions and take charge of your anger.
Okay, so hello, Kate. Welcome to our podcast of Control the Flame. So just for anyone listening, we are joined today by Kate Brindley, a good friend of mine. So I was just going to kind of try and say what it is that you do, and then I thought, you know what, I'll just mess up that. So who better to introduce herself than Kate? So Kate, could you kindly just tell us who you are, what you do? And if you want, just tell us your background, what you've been doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, firstly, thank you very much for having me, Claire. It's pleasure to be here. So, yeah, hi, everyone. My name is Kate Brindley, and I'm the founder of Kate Brindley Coaching and Training. So I help and support families thrive beyond trauma. The best place to start, I guess, is when I started coming into the trauma field and what kind of got me in there. Leading up to that, you know, my life was pretty complex. I would say that I grew up in a normal family home. I was, you know, raised in the 80s, so dad went out to work, mum stayed at home. I'm the eldest of three. And it was all seemingly normal. We didn't have anything too much going on until my parents divorced when I was 14. So I was quite a lot older when that happened. And then from there, really, I think things shifted in me. And I was kind of seeking a family that was no longer there. So I fell into a relationship 16, 17, and I was having a baby by the age of 21. And then that relationship split. And then I was kind of floundering for a little bit and, you know, single mum. I ended up losing my house. I got into a bit of debt, had to move back home. And then I got established again, met someone else, which was a pretty horrific relationship. It was domestic abuse through and through. There's no other way of putting it. And that's when I had my daughter. So by this point, I'm sort of 25, 26, back single again. And then I kind of started doing a bit of work on myself. Growing up a bit by then, obviously I'm getting older. I've always worked throughout, but I've always honestly, you know, been on benefits to support that. And then I met someone else, my future husband, and I was with him 4 years, and that ended in divorce because he had an affair. So all up until this point, it had been quite hectic. I think I'd moved by this point about 11 times. So I was pretty unstable on every level, financial, emotionally, you know, and just even where we lived. We didn't have to move. I just used to get itchy feet and was like, after a year of being somewhere, I was like, I need to move. And although we moved out, we stayed in the same area. So the kids always stayed at the same school. We were just in a different house in the same area. I'm not quite sure why I needed to do that. I've never thought about it too much, but that's what happened. And after the divorce with my husband, my daughter started to struggle a bit in primary school. She was always quite unique, is what I would say. And she was very different from my older son, you know, their behaviour patterns. And she was so difficult. Like, I've always said, if I'd have had her first, I probably wouldn't have had her. Because she didn't sleep through the night until she went to primary school. Every 4 hours, she'd be up. And I tried everything, you know, and she just wouldn't sleep. Lots of meltdowns. I mean, she'd have 8 or 9 during the day. It was just, wouldn't eat very well, just everything, the list goes on. And she was coming to the end of primary school and I got told, there is something up there, but we've got no time to sort it because she's going to sats. It was a sats. So I was like, right, okay. So we got a few sats and I thought, well, there's no point pushing things. I went and spoke to the doctor and said, look, the school said there's something, but, you know, they've not given me anything on that. And I thought, there's not much else I can do. We did the summer holidays and she started at high school. When she started at high school, she was so obvious. And it was like a 9-year-old going into high school.
Oh.
She did not cope. She was forgetting everything. She was really struggling with the uniform. She went through a pair of tights, like she was ripping her tights up all day. She was in detention pretty much every night. And then there was a few incidents and the school said, look, there's something going on here. So I went back to the doctors and we went referred to CAMS, got in to see CAMS pretty quick, actually, back then. Pretty quick. And they did the check with her and said that it was attachment issues. Here's a book. Off you pop. And that was it. No information, no nothing. As soon as they heard that I'd been through domestic abuse when she was little, they just pinned it on that. That was what her behaviour was.
Yeah,
terrible. In terms of attachment issues or trauma. I had no idea at this stage what any of that was. And I started looking, and there isn't, if you Google attachment issues, there's not actually anything online. There's attachment disorders, there's traumas, there's all of that stuff, but there isn't specifically attachment issues. So I learn more severe stuff. How does that relate to my daughter? What do I need to do?
Yeah.
And that's when I started my Facebook group, because I thought there must be other parents out there who have been told this same thing, have been dropped off a cliff with no information, looking for some. So my first group was Attachment Issues UK. So the same as me, people typed that in, at least one thing came up. And I did get some really great conversations and I learned loads. And that kind of impacted then where I went. So I went more, I was a trained teacher at this point. I'd worked in a pupil referral unit. And that, unfortunately, the placement I was working in, the place I was working in, ran into financial difficulties and I had to finish there. So I'd started a cleaning company. So I was still working and I was still running a business, but I decided to sort of do my training around that. And I got a job in a charity who worked with young people with disabilities. So, and I did my mental health level 2 with them. So I was going and teaching them and I was also mentoring them and coaching them basically into helping them get a job. And then from there, I got more inquisitive about the mental health field and how parents, even though these young people were 15 years and up, so we worked with up to 21-year-olds, parents still had a massive factor. And it was really interesting that, say, there was a young lad who had Down syndrome, and he was really keen to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
His parents were so afraid of what might happen that they limited him. They stopped him from trying these things. And it got me really interested in that whole family dynamic thing.
Yeah.
So then I went on to be trained as a children's wellbeing practitioner. So I did a bit of time in CAMS, which was really eye-opening. So I did that for a year. And then I started a master's in psychology as well for my sins. And then COVID happened. So yeah, that was a really interesting year. So I was lucky enough to still be working through COVID, but at the same time, we weren't at a lot, you know, we didn't get many clients in. So then it was a bad panic at the end to get the right amount of hours. It was a crazy year. And then from there, I went to work for Manchester Women's Aid as their project manager for the Children and Wellbeing Service. So what I learned there was obviously a fantastic charity, learned all about domestic abuse. And actually, it really opened to my eyes about what level of abuse I'd received before.
Oh, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, I hadn't realised how bad it actually was. Like some of the things that I just had taken for, well, that's just normal. So I ended up putting myself in counselling, basically, because it was still quite a trigger point. And up until this point, my daughter had never been in touch with her dad. And that happened as well. And it was just all at the same time. And I went into, just a bit like my nervous system was so upset.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It just brought everything back to the top. And I had a bit of counselling. And work supported me fantastically. But doing the work with them, it never felt like we could do enough. We got a set amount, obviously it's a charity.
Yeah.
We get a set amount of funding and there is criteria.
Yeah.
We can only do so much. And we got a lot of funding into work with the children specifically.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned how to do therapeutic play. I had the more severe cases. So I worked with children who had been sexually assaulted or physically abused. From 5 years up. And then we hosted the You and Me Mum program as well. So that was working with the parents.
Okay.
But we never got funding to do a whole family approach.
Mm-hmm.
And we were always limited to 8 sessions. We could maybe push it. Obviously, there was professional judgment.
Yeah.
If we had a child that was quite slow at opening up for obvious reasons, and we weren't on you know, session 6 before they opened up, then we could do another 4, say.
Yeah.
It's never enough. And we couldn't marry that up with what mum was going through.
Yeah.
So we started doing monthly kind of masterclasses, I guess you'd call them, or training for parents to tap into. So we tried to do something just to help them as well.
Yeah.
And I got to the end of that contract, and at the time I was learning NLP. I was coaching qualification, and I went on to do my MBIT. And it brought everything really nicely together and kind of put a bow on it. And I realised it's something that I've been doing for quite a while, but this
time
for it. And I thought, do you know what? I can help here with my experience, with my training, with my careers over the years. I can help without the red tape, without the tick boxes, without, someone telling me what to do. I can be.
It's an amazing feeling in itself, isn't it? Being, yeah. I can do that.
Yeah, this is it. And I'm able to work with the whole family. So I would work with parent first.
Mm-hmm.
I would have decided to work with 11-year-old plus. So I can sort of have those conversations with them. And then we can do it together.
Okay.
So a lot of families, if they have been through something quite challenging, they've lost that connection. And they're all functioning at different levels and different understandings and from different places.
Mm-hmm.
So getting them back onto that communication level, that fun, that enjoyment, that being with each other that they all so desperately need, but they just can't see through the woods from the trees at the minute because there's so much else going on. So it's about getting in, supporting the parent for as long as they need before they're ready to kind of integrate working with the child as well.
Do you think, thank you so much for sharing all of that, and, you know, to see it, all those adversities that you have absolutely overcome, and you absolutely have overcome them. And so hats off to you, Kate. So just, it's like you've been climbing that mountain, haven't you?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, at what point does this mountain become as like, you know, let's have a bit of an easy life. So
please.
Don't we all wish that?
Yeah.
After you, for just continuing. And for then, when you are on that, you know, and up and climbing now, you set up your own coaching business to put all of those adverse experiences into helping other people. That is amazing. Anyone who you would work with should be in amazingly safe hands. For, you know, to look at everything that you've been through and all that knowledge that having had those lived experiences that you were absolutely know what someone's going through without them even needing to say it.
Yeah.
It's so impactful.
It's being able to let people feel safe.
Absolutely.
And I would class that as one of my kind of superpowers, I guess. I have this presence about me, whether it's because of training, whether it's because of my past experience, that allows people that freedom to be themselves and who they are without judgment, and with real compassion, empathy, concern for their well-being, without them having to prove themselves, without them having to be a certain way or speak a certain way. I very much see them to the core, that before they realize, someone said it really lovely to me, that I see the magic in people before they see it themselves.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that. And it, and I just feel it's so true. So to be able to bring people's magic out, it's just amazing. It's amazing to see. It really. Yes. I know I need to get one somewhere, don't I? Or maybe that's my logo.
So, and it's all those lies, because you've kind of walked those paths, you have that instant, and it's not even perception, is it? It's, you know, you absolutely know. And I think, you know, from my, like, my background of working in domestic abuse, but on the other side of, you know, working with victims, children and families, I was working with perpetrators. There's a huge worry of being judged by people who come to our services. And I think to have a coach who, there's no judgment whatsoever, if anything, there is a complete understanding.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they don't have to even communicate anything, because the understanding is already there. And that is what makes your place a safe place, I guess. Is you're almost, there's a saying, isn't there? And it's like, I will, your footprints aren't in the sand because I'm carrying you in those moments. And I think that's lovely. So absolutely hats off to you. So, if I can just touch on, so whether you've been going through all of your own adverse experiences, you know, just when you're thinking getting on track and everything, and then, you know, comes the funding there, and your wants-to-be husband was cheating, etc. When it was, and obviously that's going to be hugely emotional for you. How would you manage any kind of anger in that? Was there any anger in that, or was it more, I just got to deal with it?
Yeah, it was a mixture, to be honest. I think there's, when you go through something quite challenging, there's different layers that you go through.
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously, first one, if it's something out the blue, you're shocked.
Yeah.
You're shocked. And then the self-blame starts kicking in. That it was all your fault, that you did this wrong, you did that wrong. And then when you've got through that, it's kind of, actually, no, there was two of us here.
Yeah.
She did this. And then your anger kicks in.
Yeah.
And you start thinking, for me personally, was so I wanted a third baby. And
okay.
that was our plan as husband and wife. We were gonna have another child. My ex-husband had one, obviously, and I had two. And we wanted another one. So we did actually get pregnant, but I lost it.
Oh, boring.
And then he decided that we wouldn't try again.
Okay.
And he didn't want to do that. So I got my little dog instead. And that was just something that, okay, you know, that's fair enough. You know, that's how it's going to be. I think it was in my early 30s. So we were together for another year after I lost the baby, and then we split up.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later after that, I found out that he had been having an affair, and it pretty much started when I lost the baby.
Oh, no.
So it's when the anger kicks in, you know.
Yeah.
A year blaming myself, because he blamed me.
And said, of course.
This, that, and the other. But then that's when the anger was like, I was so angry and upset. Like, if he'd have been honest from the start, how I felt at the time, I mean, obviously I'm talking one side and I'm just talking from my perspective. I'm not sure
what
his perspective on this is. But from my perspective, I was so angry that he'd robbed me of having that third baby.
Yeah.
You know, and if he'd have been honest from the start, and if it was something that he didn't want to have, if he'd have told me that, I probably would never have married him. Ended the relationship. I wanted that third baby so much that I wouldn't have continued that relationship.
Yeah.
So I got very angry about that, and thinking that that was going to be my last chance. That was, I mean, I definitely don't want any more now. Don't. Not at all. But at the time, that I just felt like he'd completely robbed me of that for what, a flash in the pan with someone else.
That
was when I got angry. How I managed it, how I think I've always managed it, is I'll show him.
Yeah.
And rather than allowing the anger, the self-pity, the self-blame, the woe is me kind of emotions, I kind of give myself time to grieve, process, bundle them all up and go, right, so what can I learn from this?
Yeah.
You know, and it's how I've raised my kids. There's always a lesson in things. But there is always a lesson. I took responsibility for my part in the relationship, as with all of them. And refocused and put that energy into, okay, so what's next? What are they not expecting me to do?
Yeah.
What can I achieve here for my children and myself?
Yeah.
What sort of life do I want? And that's, I guess that's on everything. You know, I remember having a conversation with my brother, and he was like, you know, I'll speak to you one night, and within 24 hours, you're like, right, okay, I've sorted it. This is happening. Da, 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 da. And I've, right or wrong, because I do wonder sometimes, should I have given myself more time? Should I have allowed for a bit more processing? But I've always come out better and come out stronger.
And I think that's such a valuable lesson, because perhaps years ago, I would have hung on to things. It doesn't do you any good, you know, because no one else is holding on to things. Everyone else is getting on with their lives. And you're just filled with so much anger and resentment that it's holding you back to an extent. And now I kind of do what you have just told us about, is that now I give myself permission to allow that emotion. But I will say, I'm not feeling great, or I'm feeling in a certain way, and that's okay.
Mm.
So I give myself permission to feel like that, but for a very short period of time. And then, as you just said, it's right, I'm moving on now, and that is staying there.
Mm.
Because that's so powerful, isn't it? It's to just address it, because you have addressed it by sitting in that moment with it.
Mm.
And then saying, okay, enough's enough now, I'm moving on from it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm guessing in some effect with trauma in people's lives, that can also be some way that they could address that, is to, because we do need to address it rather than just finding it away, I guess.
Yeah. There's definitely a choice there. There's a choice. I remember back then when I was going through relationship issues, my friend's like, God, you know, I bet you'll never love anyone again. You know, I bet you've totally sweared off love. And I was like, no, because it's not love's fault.
Yeah.
It's not. It was just whatever headspace I was in to attract this person wasn't right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I did remain single for a good 10 years because I wanted to make sure it was right for me. I needed to understand myself to have the right people around me, but not just in romantic relationships, in friendships as well, in family as well. What I was feeling, I was putting out, and I was attracting the wrong sorts of people across the board because of self-esteem issues, because I didn't believe in myself. And if, obviously, I've written a chapter in a book, and what I found really interesting was it took me right back to when I was a child and my brother being born. And from there, especially being the older sister, that's where I had to put me to the side.
Right, okay.
And I had to be the big sister.
Yeah.
I had to quiet myself down to make sure everybody else was okay. And each experience I've been through has been, no, keep quiet.
All right.
Keep quiet. And this has been the reoccurring pattern. So the divorce, I had to take care of, like, mum struggled. Dad was struggling in his own way. So I had to make sure my brother and sister were okay. That was my role. Then going into these relationships, I attracted damaged people.
And that's really interesting, sorry. Because as you said, it's that modelling, isn't it, of we attract what we give out.
Yeah.
And so if we want to be this better person, if we want to be this person who manages their trauma, who walks a different life, then we need to see that, and we need to address it and then become that.
Yeah. So in my private group on Facebook, it's one of the, like, my what should I call it? Friends in there. I'll call them friends because I know some of them. The big thing they'll always hear me say is build your self-awareness.
Yeah.
You if you spend time looking at your actions, learning from what you're saying, how you triggered, how your body reacts in certain situations. And it may be quite simple. So, for example, I was with a customer the other day, and something they said, I just went hot all over. And I was like, something's not right here. Something feels off. And I used to say to him at Manchester Women's Aid, I used to say to him, use your spidey senses. Your body and your senses is your greatest tool. And no matter who you get in front of you, no matter what they say, if something's off, if you are tuned into that intuition and then you are tuned into yourself, you will know. It will. And I think a big part of starting on your healing journey when it comes to trauma, whether it be the big complex stuff, you know, the abuse, the domestic abuse, bereavements, these sorts of things that happen, or you've got this what they call the small T traumas, and that could just be, I mean, I don't know, I'll ask you, have you got an inner voice that can sometimes be quite negative.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. Who have you ever spent time thinking about whose voice that actually is?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so I'll invite you to spend some time, and what you may see and what people don't realise is a good 90% of those inner voices, those negative inner voices, we've picked up in childhood.
Yeah, I was just about to say then, probably my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny you say that because my mum is 81 next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And she has some mild dementia, and I see her a lot at the minute. Everything that comes from her is negative.
Mm.
And I'm very aware of it now, because I'm trying to get out of it. But absolutely, I think, yeah, do you know what? That is from my parents. I'm simply being my mum. And then I see it in Harry, my son, and I'm like, oh my God, Harry's doing it as well. Which panics me.
Yeah, it's so, like, as parents, it's so easily done. You know, and especially, I mean, I was 21 when I had Jack. I was totally modelling my parents.
Yeah.
Totally, because that was the only parent that I knew. Like, yeah. It's no one's fault. It's just the cycles that we get into. I was totally modelling that. And, you know, I've apologised to my son profusely, but things like, what are you doing that for? Are you stupid?
Yeah, yeah.
Came out of my mouth back then, and it mortifies me now, knowing what I know.
But
I had that with my parents.
Yeah.
It's something, it's a cycle that I've got into. So stopping and spending the time to think about whose voice is that? What is it trying to tell me? Do I need it anymore?
And I guess as well, it's whose beliefs and values are then?
Oh, yeah.
Are they actually mine, or am I just spouting what my parents, what their beliefs are, and I've just kind of carried on with without actually challenging it?
Yeah. So one of the things that I start with in my coaching sessions is values, and it's always interesting. Like, I really struggle to do this.
Yeah.
For that reason that you've just said, are they mine, or is this just what society expects? Yeah. So you have your top, like you look at your values, you may look at 10 values. I will guarantee on the top one is family.
Yeah.
You know, love, friends, you know, they're all the same.
Yeah.
But are they actually our values? Like, if we were to be totally honest, are they our top values? Or is that what we think we should be saying?
And I was just about to say that, or are we saying it because we think that's what a person wants to hear? And we're saying it because we think if we don't say that, oh, she's going to be like, strange. I'm good for her.
Yeah, so coming back to that inner voice, it's that becomes our security blanket because we've heard it and been saying it for so long. And removing that way of thinking can be really uncomfortable. And you don't want to give it up. And it does come back. Like, it doesn't disappear forever. But what I work with is tools to manage that, to stop it having its power. So you may hear it pop up and go, do you know what? Thanks for that, Mum, but I don't need it anymore. And allow that power dynamic within your own mind, within your own body, to fall into a better balance. And when it comes to parenting or self-management, like you say, with the anger management, what it allows you to do is decide and have that choice. Oh, I'm feeling quite angry today. What triggered me? Oh, you know, it can be a number of things. It could be you didn't sleep great last night. You could wake up hungry. You could have looked at your phone before, you know, early on, just before getting out of bed, and saw a horrible. So there could be external things that do come into that. It's not all internal. But then your internal voice starts, or your, oh, today's going to be a shit day, like the weather.
Yeah.
it's a topic on everyone's mind at the moment. The weather is.
Yeah.
And some of us are waking up. Oh, God, what another crap day. We're setting the tone off for that day.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and where our security blanket with this inner voice and these inner feelings come in, if we can say, oh, today's going to be a good day. I'm going to achieve this today. I'm going to make this happen today. I'm going to be happy by the end of today. Your day will start to shift. And it all comes down to, and the very thing, the very first thing that you can do, brilliant for yourself, is build that self-awareness.
Yeah. As you've been talking then, and I've literally visioned being in this cell, and yeah, this cell of somebody else's values, somebody else's beliefs, my parents' values and my parents' beliefs. And then my parents were incredibly strict, so that's why I probably hold on to it even more, because I'm like, oh, my unconscious is saying, you're going to get into trouble.
Yeah.
And it's like, so what, I'm 52. You know, I'm allowing my own values and my own beliefs now. But the thought then was, I'm breaking through that shell, and I was instantly had this amazing feel of freedom.
Mm.
And that was wonderful. So thank you for doing that. I got a lot out of that just listening to you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm pleased.
Honestly, I'm like, oh, I like that.
It's so transformational. It's and so powerful. And I will never be an advocate for there's a one-stop shop and then you're sorted.
Yeah.
Because what happens, and what's happened for me and what happens for my clients, is they'll come in with one thing. We resolve that. We take the power away. They get the toolbox. But then that allows them to move on to something else that needs sorting.
Yeah.
You know, because they're getting stronger, they're developing more, they're becoming more self-aware, and their body and their unconscious and their mind says, you know what, you're ready for the next level.
Yeah.
And then something else comes up. And this is, it's a lifelong journey. A good friend of mine had a very troublesome past when she was young girl. And she's been through the therapy. She's had loads of different therapy throughout her whole life. And she's in her 40s now. And she's like, do you know what? I think it's time for me to go back, because something's come up again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you can start, just take that first step of becoming self-aware, whether you do it through meditation, mindfulness, just sitting in your back garden when the sun eventually comes out with a cup of tea, thinking back. It can be simple as that. It doesn't have to be expensive. You don't have to go out and get, you know, the candles and all of that stuff. It's just allow yourself to be quiet. One of my biggest things was keeping busy.
Yeah.
I did not want to give myself any time to be
with your thoughts.
Be with my thoughts, to feel those emotions. I just kept moving on. And that's why I said before, right or wrong, whether I hadn't given myself enough time to process.
Mm.
Whereas having that good 10-year break to do, and I'm not suggesting anyone else, it just happened like that.
Yeah.
Or come and see me and we'll do it a bit quicker than 10 years. Get the plug in. But just taking that moment, 5 minutes a day.
Yeah.
5 minutes a day of your time, your free time. Okay, what is my past relationship showing me? What is my friendship showing me? You know.
So in that moment when you have that negative thought that pops in your head, or when you've done something, you know, you might have acted something out or whatever, it's that time of asking yourself, why? Why did I just do that? And actually, could I have done it a different way? Had I have done it a different way, would that have made me feel better, worse? And just like you said, be with yourself and find out actually how you work, rather than being just this almost like, I'm not even sure if it's the right word, but I was going to say, well, I'm not even going to say it, because I don't even think I'm going to answer it, but almost like this it's just like a robot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of going through the motions of, like, this is how I have to be, because it's where I'm told I've got to be. And sit with it and understand and actually become the you that you are.
Yeah.
And not the you that you've been told you have to be.
Yeah. We're so quick to blame and find a reason. And sometimes, most times, that reason is actually within us.
Mm.
It's not external.
Yeah.
But we look for an external reason, or the kids are playing up, the money's not coming in, you know, my husband spoke to me in this way, my mum's like that. It's about how we dealt with that information.
Yeah.
Now, when we were children, we had no resources to deal with this.
Yeah.
You know, our brains weren't developed, our functioning wasn't there, our understanding wasn't there. So things that happen to us in childhood are massively magnified.
Mm.
You know, so I always give the example. So I speak to a lot of people that say, no, I've never had anything traumatic happen. I was one of those people. I had nothing happen to me when I was a kid. Like, there wasn't anything. It was a simple, happy life. But it can be as simple as sitting playing hide and seek, you little, with your mum, and you're hiding in the cupboard in the dark, and she takes just a little bit too long to come and find you. And as a child, as a 5-year-old, 4-year-old, you sat there, oh my God, where's my mum?
Yeah.
You know, when you start feeling this anxiety building.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's no one there to help you with it. And there's no one there. You don't burst out the doors and, you know, say, Mum, I was highly anxious then. Because you don't. It's a body sensation. Now, for some people, that they get over that. They see the mum, they're happy, it's all resolved. For other people, that gets stored, that feeling, that sensation in the body. And that can lead to, I mean, I'm being a little dramatic, but it could lead to abandonment issues.
Wow.
Lead to being scared of the dark. It can lead to, you know, insecure attachment styles. It can lead to people pleasing. Because in that moment, your immune system has gone into panic zone and there was no one there to help you comfort that or understand that. So it doesn't have to be a huge traumatic thing. And a lot of people won't even remember that. But the body.
And I think I read somewhere, and it said, when you remember a traumatic incident, or when you remember an incident, you are changing that incident.
Yeah.
Because every time you recount it, you will never recount it exactly how it happened. You'll recount it as perhaps the last time you remembered it. And obviously, we can't remember everything in life. So every time we recount something, we changed it.
Mm.
And I thought that was really quite impactful as well.
Yeah.
Memory
is an incredible thing. To remember something appropriately, there's so many sections that you need to have. So think about your a song that you love. Is it actually the song or is it the emotion attached to the song?
Yeah, that's good.
Does it remind you of a certain situation that was going on at the time?
Mm.
You know, there's so many songs that I remember. Like, I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I can remember some songs I was singing when I was 6. Do you know, like,
they're
ingrained in me. And I can remember who I was with, what I was doing. Oh, what is it? This, what song is it now? The Houston one. Oh, I want to date somebody.
Yeah.
Recorded me singing. Anyway, moving on. that was my first dance in primary school.
Really?
Boy's name, and I remember what, and he asked me to dance, bless him, and it was my leaving day of primary school.
Oh.
But I can't remember what I had for breakfast.
Yeah. And that's been a good attached memory, isn't it?
So what happens with the negative stuff, we still attach those things. So if there was a song playing when the abuse was happening, that song can trigger you.
Or
if there was a smell or another sound, maybe footsteps or a texture, you may have noticed the material beneath you. So in that moment, we become heightened and we notice things. And like, for example, the hide and seek, the dark matter, the smell of what was in the cupboard might set us off. And because we don't remember it now as adults, we just get triggered by that smell and we might go into fight, flight, freeze. So we might be like, oh, no, I can't stand that. I need to leave.
But we don't know why.
We don't know why. Or we might react angrily and or push people away before they give you a reason to, because you're so about abandonment. And each, what you'll find, and what's been really interesting when I've done like the timeline therapy with people and with myself, is we get confirmations that we should feel this way. We fulfill our own prophecies. So a gentleman I was working with, he really struggles to speak and get his point across. And we did his timeline and he worked out it was when he started at a new school when he was six or seven, I think he moved schools. And the teacher sort of said, oh, we've got this, we'll call him Phil. We've got Phil in today. He's come from a different school. Do you want to tell us what was the school like? And his recollection of his first school was he went in a tunnel to get to school.
Right.
Said it. So he just, in his immature brain, said it was underground. My school was under a tunnel. So the teacher said, look at Phil here. He used to go to school in a cave.
Right.
So the teacher thinking, you know, she integrating him, she's having a bit of fun, she's having a little giggle, has the poor Phil now. Was like, everyone's laughing at me. They're making fun of me. She's gone in right at the heart of him and dinked his self-esteem. And then as we tracked his timeline, each situation that he jumped to was another time where he was shut down.
Yeah.
Said something wrong. And now, like, coming out of that, it was like, oh, that's a ridiculous reason why I haven't got confidence in my own voice.
Yeah.
It's so understandable, but it just gets stuck. But like I say, we have our whole system is about us surviving. That is at its core. So if something sets that system off, so for example, in his case, it was this being made fun of or how he perceived being made fun of, our bodies are instinctively going to make sure we remember each time it happens, it doesn't happen again.
Okay.
And this can turn into actively avoiding speaking in public or saying what you need to say, you know, dumbing it down, make sure you don't have any reaction. And we will keep, our bodies will see that as that's how we keep safe.
Right.
So that is how we get stuck in these patterns. It's about safety. It's about surviving.
And it's our conscious brain keeping us sane.
Conscious brain, it's your bodily functions, it's your immune systems. It's no one's fault. There is no blame in this.
And I think that's such a brilliant thing to say, is it's no one's fault. Because we quite often will blame ourselves, or our unconscious will blame ourselves.
Yeah.
And hold on to it and hold on to it and hold on to it. So tell me a bit more about, so who can you work with and what can you do to help those people or those families?
Yeah, so like I've shared, there's lots of ways to help. So I have a private group on Facebook where you can come and just get to know me a bit more and just what it is I do. And then also, I have my one-to-one coaching, which is a mixture of NLP, MBA. It's very much tailored to what you need.
Okay.
I'll have an idea for my last session, but it pretty much, if you come with something that needs to be discussed that you've had come up over the last week, then we'll do that. It's very much bespoke to you. Like I say, I work for 11 years up. a lot of the clients have already tried some sort of therapies, so they're not quite in crisis, but they've been left still with questions, and they've not been have a toolbox or a management way. So they're not even quite sure where this has come from. So
okay.
And also, there's a touch of mentoring in there. So if a parent does come through who's really struggling with family dynamics or challenging behaviors,
yes.
Conversation there around what techniques can we try and put in place and leave with them. So I do that. I do have my 6 weeks program, which is a parenting empowerment program.
Okay.
Still working on the name, but the bulk of it's there. I have a membership where I go live every 2 weeks, and there's resources, there's discounts, and also I get guest speakers in. So there's lots of different ways. I have my masterclasses as well, which I do live, but they are recorded, so you can purchase them afterwards as well.
Okay. So where can people find you? What's the name of your private group and your website?
Do you know what? I need to read it. Hang on. So if you look for Burnley Coaching, yeah. I've lost you. Hang on, where have you gone?
I'm still here.
I know you're still there, but I've lost the video. Oh well, I can't see the video. Oh, there we go, you're back. Yeah, so if you look for Kate Burnley Coaching and Training, I am on Instagram, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on Facebook, and there's all links on there to come through. I have a website as well, which has got all the links on.
So what's your website? Is your website Kate Burnley Coaching?
Kate Burnley Coaching.
Okay. Kate, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you speak on our podcast today. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your passion.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Control the Flame podcast. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode and learned some useful tips on how to manage your anger in a healthy way. If you've been affected by anything in the podcast, or if you want to share your feedback or questions, please email claire@angermanagementcoach.co.uk and I'll be happy to hear from you and offer you more support. Thank you for listening, and do remember, you have the power to control the flame.